Okay, so the subject that I would like to discuss today is discrete dynamics, specifically applications of discrete dynamics to the development of numerical methods for time integration of dynamical systems, but the focus here really is on solid mechanics and structures. And discrete dynamics, I think the right way to understand it is really as a general theory of dynamics, self-contained, with a scope that is very similar, if not identical, to the classical theory of Lagrangian and Hamiltonian mechanics. The distinguishing characteristic of discrete dynamics is that, of course, time is a discrete variable ab initio. So this theory does not arise from taking the classical theory and discretizing time, but rather one can think of it as being, again, a self-contained theory where time is just a discrete variable. And in fact, I think it's very nice to just compare the classical theories with continuous time and the discrete dynamics theory side by side, just to see that really the scope is identical. Okay? They two parallel each other, especially as regards conservation principles. And now, because time is a discrete variable, of course, discrete dynamics is directly useful in computation, because there, okay, you want time discretization methods, and then discrete dynamics, therefore, is ideal for coming up or devising time integration techniques. But that's really a side effect, and I see it a bit as icing on the cake. And as I said, other than that, it's a self-contained theory of dynamics. So if we start with the classical theory of Lagrangian mechanics, there one is concerned with the motions of systems, the configurations of which are points in a manifold queue. For instance, typically in our engineering applications, very often in structural mechanics, for instance, or in molecular dynamics, the configuration manifold is just n copies of Euclidean space. Okay, then one identifies the tangent bundle, and then one introduces the Lagrangian that contains all the information regarding the mechanical properties of the system. And that's a function defined on the tangent bundle and perhaps the time axis and takes values in R. Okay, then the governing variational principle is Hamilton's principle, okay, that is expressed in terms of the action integral, which is a functional on the trajectories of the system, okay, expressed in the usual way. And then one insists on the stationarity of the action integral, and that's Hamilton's principle. So that's, of course, well known to all of you. And a central role in the classical theory is played by symmetry and the invariance properties of Lagrangians and the induced conserved quantities along trajectories. And the way one introduces that in the general theory, one understands symmetry, is in terms of actions of Lie groups on the configuration manifold. Okay, so one introduces a Lie group G and the corresponding Lie algebra, then the left action of G on the configuration manifold is a mapping with the usual properties that the action of the identity is the identity mapping. The action of H followed by the action of G is the same as the action of GH. And one introduces also the corresponding infinitesimal generator, essentially by linearization, okay, using the exponential. So the infinitesimal generator, okay, is a vector field corresponding to every vector in the Lie algebra TEG. And now, based on these quantities, now one can introduce the all-important momentum maps, G. Okay, so given an action G, then the momentum map is a function defined on the tangent bundle times the time axis on TEG star, and it is identified by this identity. So integrating the fiber derivative, okay, which I've written here as P, as the momentum, against the infinitesimal generator has to be the same as multiplying G by the corresponding vector Xi. Okay. And if one insist that this be true for all members Xi of the Lie algebra, then that identifies by simple algebra the momentum map corresponding to that particular symmetry. Okay, so that's just by way of establishing the notation, and again, by way of comparison to the discrete theory. And now one has the classical Navis theorem, okay, which one has, okay, a Lagrangian that is invariant under the action of a group, then the corresponding momentum map is a constant of the motion. If you're given a symmetry, you have, as you all know, a momentum map that is conserved along trajectories. And there is absolutely no ambiguity and no guesswork. Okay, so one follows from the other in a completely mechanical way. And the classical examples would be, again, for instance, in n-times Euclidean space, okay, so the group of translations, which would be the Euclidean space En itself, and then the action of the group would be simply to shift all the coordinates of all the particles of the system, one by one, by the same translation, and then the corresponding map, of course, is the sum of the linear momentum of all the particles. Okay, so that's well-known result, and then one has exactly the same thing for angular momentum, where the configuration manifold again, n copies of Euclidean space, the group. Oops, I'm sorry. It's in the way. We're going to have an accident here.
How does this work?
Oh, there we are. How many professors does it take to remove a projector? N. Okay, let's focus again. Okay, so, okay, rotations, momentum map, sum of angular momentum, as you all know. Okay, and energy takes a little bit of doing. Okay, there are many ways in which you can understand conservation of energy, but really to hammer it into this framework, one way to do that is to go to a space-time extension, and that will prove very useful, as you'll see, in the numerical context. So one enlarges or extends the configuration manifold by appending to it the time axis. So now we have an extended configuration manifold, which is the Cartesian product of R times Q. And so now time becomes an additional degree of freedom, okay? And we are allowing, as part of the solution, for arbitrary reparametrizations of time. So one introduces a standard reference time, somehow, that simply establishes the sequence in which events take place, okay? And prime is the derivative with respect to that standard parameter. And then Q would be any time reparametrization of the system, which is unknown, okay, and determining Q0 as a function of the reference time would be part of the solution process. And then the corresponding extended manifold is simply obtained from, Lagrangian, is obtained from the original Lagrangian by a simple change of variables, okay, so one then obtains an extended Lagrangian that is defined on this extended manifold. And so now one can introduce an action group that simply shifts time, okay, so one considers simply time shifts, and then if this Lagrangian then does not depend explicitly on Q0, then one obtains an additional momentum map, which is the energy, total energy of the system. So that, and then of course another theorem would tell you that this momentum map is conserved along trajectories. So that's one way to get conservation of energy. Now, the conventional way, okay, in which numerical methods or time integrators have been developed in computational mechanics, or at least the most common way, I should say, and at least that's my view of the matter, is that one typically starts from the early Lagrange equations of the system. So one determines the early Lagrange equations or equations of motion of the system, okay, mx double dot plus kx equals f, something like that. And then one discretizes these Euler Lagrange equations as a system of ODEs. Okay, use your favorite time integrator for ODEs, Runge-Kutta, forward Euler, backward Euler, whatever, okay, and then apply it to this particular or special system of ODEs, and you get, now you're off to the races, you can start computing. Okay, so for instance, a classical example, which is really the workhorse maybe of in computational mechanics, is again, Lagrangians of this type, where you have a quadratic kinetic energy with a constant mass and then a potential energy that might be time dependent, and this Neimark's algorithm that, again, is very commonly used in computational mechanics. Okay, so now, of course, the problem of this approach is that you neglect the variational structure. Okay, you neglect the fact that these equations of motion really derive from a Hamilton's principle. And then, in particular, okay, so this approach does not guarantee conservation of the momentum maps, okay? So and there is no Noether's theorem that goes along with this procedure. So that's a problem. Now, a completely different point of view that was pioneered by Veselov and Marsden and Wendland really wrote one of the papers that established very clearly the connection between discrete dynamics and numerical methods and developed the basic program. It's really a turning point, I think, in the development of the field, is to adopt a variational point of view ab initio again. Okay, so one does not deal with the equations of motion or Euler-Lagrange equations, but one deals directly with Hamilton's principle. So in this framework, the discrete Lagrangian, which again encapsulates all the mechanical properties of the system for discrete time, is defined on pairs of points, okay, so Q times Q, and morally is supposed to approximate the incremental action from the time tk to time tk plus 1. So here, time is a discrete variable. It's labeled by an integer k. This plays the role of the standard reference time, okay, in that I alluded to previously, simply tells you the sequence of events. And the real time, of course, is t. So one introduces an approximate Lagrangian like this, and then an action sum, okay, that is defined now on discrete trajectories, okay, sequences of points on Q. And then the operating system's principle, rather, is to render the discrete action stationary with respect to the points of the trajectory and subject to constraints. So that's a different point of view. Okay, we're not dealing with the Euler-Lagrange equations and discretizing them in time. We're dealing with a mechanical system, again, which ab initio has time as a discrete variable. And then we characterize the trajectories of the system variationally by a discrete version of Hamilton's principle. So then the Euler-Lagrange equations, the one obtained by rendering ST stationary, are of this type. Okay, so our algebraic is an algebraic system of equations. Each one of the equations involves, for instance, in the simplest case, 3 points. And okay, so if you know QK minus 1 and QK, then you can solve for QK plus 1 from the system of equations, and then you can do that recursively and advance the solution in time. Okay, so that's business as usual. But the big difference with respect to traditional methods is that now we have a variational framework that ensures that there is a discrete version of Noether's theorem. Okay, so one introduces a momentum map in this way. Okay, so the derivative of the discrete Lagrangian with respect to the second variable plays the role of the fiber derivative of P, okay, in the continuous theory. Okay, this is the infinitesimal generator of a certain symmetry of LD, and then that unambiguously and completely mechanically without any guesswork identifies the discrete momentum maps of the system, which in principle are not clear in discrete systems. What is linear momentum? Not clear. What is angular momentum of a discrete system? Not clear. What is energy? Even less clear. So this procedure identifies the momentum maps automatically for you without any guesswork. And then one has the discrete version of Noether's theorem, which is, again, if you have a discrete Lagrangian in this case, which is invariant under the action of some group, then the momentum map is a constant of the discrete motion. So not only does the procedure identify the quantities that are conserved for you, but there is a guarantee, there is a theorem that tells you that these quantities are conserved exactly, not approximately or up to order delta t squared, I mean, exactly, okay? Yes? Gauge transformations? You're talking about gauge transformations?
Yeah, you might call them that. Does your discrete dynamic handle those conserved quantities also?
I'm not sure that I follow the question. Okay, maybe you're talking about configurational forces also?
For some mechanical systems, that conservation laws that are not in the form that you gave, because it's not just a matter of preserving the Lagrangian under a group action, but also they add to the Lagrangian at all time derivative. Which leaves the equation of motion in variance, but not the Lagrangian itself.
Right.
I wondered whether this.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, I would interpret that as a gauge transformation. Yeah. But I'm not sure that I have anything intelligent to say about that. So maybe Jerry has some insights. I have to say that this field, as far as I'm concerned, is really starting. There are a lot of things to do. There are definitely lots of open questions, things we do not understand, or at least I don't understand. So I'm telling you what I know, which is probably not much, but...
Yeah, the whole question of gauge transformations in the discrete setting hasn't been properly addressed. I think it's very simple.
You can add to any Lagrangian, okay, a function that is, okay, a term that is the difference of a function of qk and qk minus 1, and that will not change the trajectories, obviously, because it leaves the action sum, the discrete action sum unchanged. You just add f of qk minus f of qk minus 1 to the Lagrangian, you get another Lagrangian and gives you the same trajectories. What the implications of that are, I don't know. Yeah, 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 that's a gauge transformation, yeah. But I don't know whether that... More Qs.
No, he didn't mention
that. That doesn't ring a bell, I'm sorry.
Yours? Higher order integrators don't work. You might think that...
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah. Again, okay, so I'm sure there's a lot to do, yeah.
This,
yeah, 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 I understand, yeah. Okay.
Can I just make a comment?
Sure. Higher derivatives of time.
Yeah.
Right. But, I mean, the procedure is clear. I mean, you work with a discrete action sum, okay, and you do some reduction of sorts, and, okay, so it's, I think the procedure is clear in every case. So just to give simple examples, okay, so again, with our favorite Lagrangian, okay, that again arises in molecular dynamics, for instance, and structural mechanics. So now the conservation of linear momentum takes the following form. Okay, so one understands conservation in terms, again, of the action of translations on the system. Okay, so this would be the action of G, exactly as in the continuous time case. And then if one goes, I mean, just turns the crank, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. So for the particular case, of course, you have to have some discrete Lagrangian, okay? And the discrete Lagrangian for which you get these results are those for which you take the continuous action sum, you do a Galerkin reduction for piecewise linear trajectories, and you use the generalized midpoint rule for the integrals. Okay, I'm sorry. GMR. Okay, so I took some transparencies out due to the shortness of time. Okay, but so for this particular discrete Lagrangian, okay, That's a good point. And then for this action, you turn the crank, and you get that this is the corresponding momentum map. Okay, and of course it makes eminent sense. Okay, so this is somehow the total linear momentum of the system. Okay, but you could take any other approximation to the velocity, multiply by the mass, you know, sum it up, and in principle, morally, it would be also total linear momentum. But the procedure identifies the precise definition of total linear momentum that is conserved exactly by the numerical solution. And same for angular momentum. So for instance, again, if you turn the crank here with respect to the action of SON, okay, invariance with respect to rotations, then that gives you a precise recipe for computing the total angular momentum of the system, where you have to use the position vector at qk plus 1. And then, again, the discrete version of Navier's theorem guarantees that is conserved exactly along trajectories. Now, at this point, really, I mean, the theory seemed to have reached its limit in the sense that there was a well-known theory, theorem by G and Marsden. I don't know if I'm pronouncing G correctly, but Gur, okay. kind of like G better, but anyway, by GE and Marsden, who had established really an intrinsic limitation of these procedures, that you could not have really a time integrator that was simultaneously symplectic, linear and angular, and energy conserving. Now, but if you look at the theorem, then the theorem is really proved for constant time step. So what we found to be the way out from that limitation is, again, to go to a space-time formulation and put time in the same footing as all the other configurational variables, okay, and take the time step, so the point tk at which you sample the solution is yet another unknown of the system, okay? So one goes to the extended space-time picture, okay, introduces again, allows for arbitrary reparametrizations of time, which in the discrete version, in discrete dynamics, means that the times tk are unknowns, okay? And then if the system then is invariant on the time shifts, then this procedure tells you, okay, that this particular fiber derivative, now in the direction of tk plus 1, is a momentum map, okay, which is a momentum map corresponding to time, and therefore you must interpret it as minus the energy of the system. And that momentum map is conserved exactly along the discrete trajectories. So you get energy conservation. First of all, the variational approach tells you what the discrete energy is, which again is not clear, ab initio. And then it tells you that that discrete energy is conserved exactly along the discrete trajectories, provided that you allow for time adaption. Okay. So for, again, our favorite case, if you turn the variational crank, the expression you get for the energy is simply, okay, this approximation of the kinetic energy, and then the potential energy evaluated at the sampling time for the generalized midpoint rule, okay? And this now identifies the energy of the system, and again, the theory tells you that if you use this integrator, then this discrete energy is conserved exactly. So now you can... Okay, I'm sorry. So I eliminated a couple of transparencies. That's causing a lot of trouble. So alpha is the midpoint rule parameter. Okay, so for instance, for central differences, it would be 1/2. Okay, and this is the expression that you get for the energy for this particular discrete Lagrangian. You obtain by applying the generalized midpoint rule to the computation of the discrete Lagrangian. So this is a particular discrete Lagrangian, and this is what you get for the energy, and alpha is the parameter, is an algorithmic parameter that goes from 0 to 1. Yeah, in general, it would be implicit, yeah. Maybe I should just show it. This is the time step. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. No. This is for the case of Arrhen, okay? So that's the case of Arrhen, but in general, you could use the exponential mapping, you could use any number of things. This is the derivative, though, that's right, that's in the tangent space. Q prime is in the tangent space, so there's no problem in principle with dividing a vector by a scalar in all cases, yeah. Okay, so I would say this is general. But in the discrete case, Q0 prime is tk plus 1 minus tk divided by k plus 1 minus k, so it's just a time step, okay? That's a good point. Okay. Yes, of course. I mean, the scope, again, is identical to the classical theory. Here, I'm just emphasizing the Lagrangian picture, which is the simplest one. And it's good enough just for computational mechanics in general, I think. Okay, so the variational procedure identifies the discrete energy for you, and it tells you the discrete energy is conserved exactly. However, we have extended configurational manifold to R times Q, where R is the is time, okay? So that means we have an additional variable. That means we have an additional Euler-Lagrange equation that you have to solve for, of course. okay? So otherwise, another theorem would not apply. And if you work out the expression for the additional Euler Lagrange equation, okay, you find the momentum map that we had defined earlier, okay, in this particular configuration being equal to zero, and that just means energy conservation. Okay, so the Euler Lagrange equation corresponding to time is the equation of conservation of energy. Okay, so you have implications in several ways. To conserve energy, you have to adapt time. Okay, so that's shown here, that you have to take T as an unknown. Okay, conversely, if you adapt time, then you can conserve energy, and the two really go together. And I think that's one of the powerful insights that is provided by the theory, that energy conservation really goes together with time adaption, okay, and is required with time adaption, because otherwise you'd be constrained by Gehr and Marsden. Okay, so that's a simple example that we worked out early on. Okay, we consider a system with 2 degrees of freedom, and the system is consists of a double well potential and a harmonic oscillator. They're weakly coupled in this way, and these are some of the trajectories of the system. And okay, so this is the energy history for the case where you take a constant time step, and then of course you see the energy of the system oscillating, okay, with the period of the system. And this is the energy of the system where you do a time adaption, and you take time as an additional unknown, and then of course you see that the energy is perfectly flat and conserved. Okay, so that's essentially how this is supposed to work. Okay, so I'd like to finish briefly by the extension that we did of these concepts to the case of asynchronous, what we call asynchronous variational integrators. So now we have established, I think, a very clear connection between time adaption and energy. Okay, so we can exploit that insight now to go beyond a simple global energy conservation, okay, and formulate a more ambitious program, which is the following. Okay, so we're no longer satisfied with just global energy conservation, but consider a system now which is composed of a number of subsystems. So typical applications could be finite elements. Okay, so there the total Lagrangian would be the sum of the Lagrangians of the elements, and so on. Okay, and so now we would like to not only conserve global energy, but also conserve the local energy of each one of the subsystems. So we are interested not only on global energy, but local, detailed local energy conservation, which is a much more ambitious plan. Now, clearly, to do so, okay, at least, you know, in the framework of this theory, what you have to do then is to endow every subsystem, every element, for instance, with its own clock. You have to allow for time adaption at the local level. So, again, you formulate a discrete Lagrangian as the sum of discrete Lagrangians corresponding to the subsystems, elements, for instance, or atoms in molecular dynamics, and each one of the subsystems is allowed to run asynchronously on its own clock. Okay, so the local time of each one of the subsystems now is an unknown. Okay, so you're extending the configurational manifold to Q, now Cartesian product R, raised to the number of subsystems. Okay, and in my view, this provides a firm variational footing, actually, for some of the methods that have been around in the computational mechanics literature for some time, like subcycling, okay, that were pioneered by Ted Balischka and Tom Hughes and others. And it just adds a lot of, I think, theoretical insight into the formulation of those methods. Okay, so then one goes through one turns the crank of, okay, formulating the momentum maps corresponding to each one of the local times that defines the local energy, and then the corresponding Euler Lagrange equation is conservation of local energy. Now these EKs, of course, contain source and flux terms, so these local balance equations allow for flux of energy between the subsystems. I'm almost done. Okay, so now I'll finish with an application of this methodology to the analysis of the rotor of the Apache HE-64 helicopter, which is a problem that is of obvious interest to the U.S. Air Force. And okay, so this is the discretization of the rotor into finite elements. These are 10-noted tets, and the mesh was done using a commercial product, which will remain nameless. But one typical feature of these meshers is that they introduce a lot of slivers into the mesh. Okay, so if you're doing explicit integration, that will kill you, because the slivers actually will dictate the stable time step for you, and the stable time step is almost zero, okay, so because of the presence of those slivers. So we did the AVI integration of the system. We didn't actually solve the local conservation of or balance, energy balance equations exactly for the local time steps, but we simply chose the local time step by the Courant condition. Okay, so, and we saw three cases corresponding to three different values of the angular velocity of the system. Okay, so let me show you how this goes. For low angular velocity, okay, so the motion of the rotor is perfectly stable. There is no air here, so it's just the dynamics of the rotor itself. And okay, it just goes on and on and on indefinitely, because just nothing interesting happens, like watching. Yeah, it's just an initial angular velocity, and then let go. It's just a bit like watching grass grow. Okay, so it's a stable motion, and Paul is looking at me, so let me. So nothing happens. Now you increase the angular velocity, and then interesting things begin to happen. There is a dynamic instability, and you'll see finite oscillations begin to happen at some point. And obviously the motions become very nonlinear. Even in the stable case, they're nonlinear because of the finite rotations. Okay, so you can see the rotors begin to flap at some point.
Calculation.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, completely 3D, yeah. And, okay, I think you see the instability actually building up. And, well, of course, I mean, this is done by really making the material softer. That's the way it was done. And then going to the higher value of the angular velocity, then the system, I mean, the motion becomes very unstable, and as you can see, okay, this would not be a very good rotor design. Definitely, the rotor is lacking either in stiffness or in mass or in both. Okay, so you can see that now the instabilities become, you know, the amplitude becomes very high, and this is a very complex motion. Okay. Seems to be frozen. Oh, here we are. Okay. Well, so this is the number of calls per element. Okay, you can see that, of course, the slivers have to be called many, many times because they run on a very short time scale, whereas the fat elements can be called many, much fewer times. And you can see that there is a net speed up of about 5.8. Okay. Actually, I think it's typical for these kind of methods, subcycling methods. And this is the energy history. And this is the last thing that I'm showing. In the stable case, the first unstable case and the second unstable case. So this is time, and this is the total energy of the system. As you can see, the total energy of the system remains essentially constant. Okay, so. And but what I'm showing here that is more interesting is for the most unstable case, we chose, Adrian chose, a particular element at random, really, I think, at random. He flipped a coin and selected an element. So this is the energy of the element now, okay, a single element in the mesh, and this is time. And you can see that, of course, the energy of the element fluctuates because there is energy flux to the adjacent element, so energy enters and exits the element. And on the scale of the energy of the system, what we're plotting here is the imbalance in the local energy conservation equation for that particular element. And you can see again that on the scale of the energy of the element, the imbalance is essentially zero. Okay, so energy is conserved for all practical purposes, not only at the global level, but for every single element. Okay? And those are AVIs. So to conclude, Mr. Chairman, there are many other aspects of variational integrators and AVIs that are known at this point and that I couldn't cover, and others that are unknown. Okay, so for instance, VIs were established to be symplectic early on, okay, by a number of people. The convergence that has been studied both for variational integrators and AVIs. The methods can be extended to dissipative systems by a number of means. Also, they can be extended to the PDE setting using multi-symplectic geometry, and that introduces a number of interesting features, like, for instance, you can do both horizontal as well as vertical variations, and you get things like configurational forces conjugate to the mesh and conjugate to the structure of the system. You get a very natural definition of the SLB energy momentum tensor and, for instance, the J integral in fracture mechanics. And the energy, these methods are also very useful in formulating collision methods that conserve the momentum maps, including energy exactly through the collision. And there are applications now in progress to fluids, molecular dynamics, shock physics, general relativity at Caltech and at other places. That's all I have to say. Thank you very much.